Good morning. Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. Good morning. I'm Thorne. This is the Church of the Wi-Fi Wireless Extravaganza. I want to welcome you all here. It's great to be back at DEF CON.
Thank you for being relatively sober.
Yeah, we're not going to do any jokes this morning because we figure having you guys here for the first talk early in the morning is a bad enough joke as it is. So, but we're all happy to see you here. I'm going to start off about a little bit about the church. We're going to talk about some of our current projects, and we hope it's going to be informative and entertaining for you. So the panel today is myself. I'm Thorne, as I said. We also have the Prez 98 and the infamous Canadian hacker Renderman.
Thank you.
So a kind of a question that we get asked a lot is who are the Church of the Wi-Fi and what are we? Are we pirates? Are we pirates or ninjas? Are we pirates with stealthy ninja skills? Are we ninjas that go arg? So one answer is really that we're kind of a collective, a church, if you will, of where we do some wireless and Wi-Fi voodoo. The other answer is, of course, that we're a bunch of code monkeys that wear Pope hats. kind of like that. Any resemblance, by the way, to the panel this morning, to that picture, it's purely coincidental. So the church as a group has a website that basically this is what we really do. We do projects, mainly around wireless stuff. If you're here, I assume you've probably heard a little bit about some of our projects in the past. We're going to talk about a little bit about those today. We're also going to talk about some of the newer ones. But if you go to the main site, there's currently over 50 projects that are all wireless. They're all in varying amounts of detail. They all kind of depend on what your skill level is how well you might do with them. But they range from beginner to really hardcore stuff on there. This is just kind of a real brief overview of what it was as of about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, what the site looked like. It's probably changed since then because there's new ones going on all the time. Also, regarding your skill level, if you're going to tackle some of these things, some of them are really, really simple, and some of them you have to have two propellers on your beanie. It gets pretty bad, but they are all over the place, and anybody is welcome to come in there and take a look around. Absolutely. The first thing I want to talk about is our big project for this year. But I got to take a step back before I talk about that, and I got to talk about last year's DEF CON. Last year at DEF CON, I was putting on the wireless contest, and I had a little bit of a problem. And this is the problem. Okay. This is actually this year's contest, or one portion of it. But this is the problem. People would look at this kind of thing, and they would go, oh, my God, I don't have the skills. So we only had, like, two teams competing last year. So they'd say, I don't have any skills. And we'd say, why don't you compete? I don't have any skills. You know, they get the Napoleon Dynamite answer, no skills, I don't have any computer skills, and girls only want guys with skills. So we said, how are we going to get people to come out here and have skills? So we took a look around, and we talked amongst ourselves, and this guy, Convert, are you here? Are you still in the PD's? I guess he's hiding. I think the PD still has him from the cookout last night, the toxic barbecue. But Converge kind of summed it up very nicely. He said, I care about demonstrating and inciting a hacker attitude towards my fellow attendees. And we came up with the concept of learning and touching equals doing this stuff.
Not touching each other.
Yeah, touching the equipment, not each other. So we're going to, this year, in looking around, we said, what can we do to teach this stuff and to get people the skills that they need? So we took a look around and we said our friend Lost, had run a really exciting hardware session last year, some nice breakout sessions on robotics and stuff. We took a look at what was going on with the wireless or the lockpick village. So we said what we want to do is we want to provide an area to do those kinds of things for wireless skills. And so we want to provide breakout sessions, we want to have some tutorials, all that kind of stuff. Again, the whole concept of learn plus touching equals doing it. So what we came up with is this year's big project, and that is the DEF CON 15 Wireless Village. And we hope it's going to be up in Skybox 209. We are hoping that every one of you will at least come in and say hello and stop by and hopefully learn some stuff. We've got a whole bunch of subjects that are going to be covered. This is just a couple of them. I'm going to be doing some stuff on RFID. Squiddly One is going to be doing some stuff on wireless hacking for PlayStation portables. Render is going to be doing some stuff on talking about direction finding. We've just got a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be covered, and we really hope that you'll come by and learn something. Or at least, you know, if you've got someone that's here that's in a different talk and they don't know about some of this stuff, they're talking about perhaps competing in the wireless contest, that we would, you know, send them over, learn something. Hopefully we'll get some more people competing this year. So, just, again, some more stuff on regarding the what we're going to be teaching up there, the wireless technologies, doing the breakout sessions. Again, that's where we're going to be, up in Skybox 209. And we've even got a very limited amount of those really cool stickers that look just like that. So if you're not cool and you don't have one of these on your laptop, you should definitely come up and at least try and own a sticker. Now, because of this, we're integrating the wireless contest this year with the wireless village. And so, again, the whole idea of learning plus teaching equals doing this stuff, that you can come upstairs, learn a skill in a session, and then go out and actually compete. All right. Enough about that. Some of the other projects. This is kind of an infamous one that we came up with last year, and this is the WPA rainbow tables. I think probably some of you have heard about these. They've been talked about a little bit nationally. We came up with a concept last year of this is actually he and I talking. He and I talking on the phone is like a really bad idea, because we think about these things. We say, what if we did, and all of a sudden something starts rolling. So we were talking about a year ago, a little over a year ago, and we said, if we put together some sort of rainbow table, would that work? And at first we said, no, it won't work because of a couple of different things. And then we talked to some friends who said, yeah, it would definitely work if you did A, B, and C. So after a lot of futzing around, a lot of trial and error, a lot of error on error, we finally produced the first rainbow table for WPA, and it was 172,000 words, passwords, that were in a dictionary. They were run against the 1,000 most common SSIDs. That resulted in a 7-gigabyte rainbow table, and was kind of popular. We've had a lot of downloads. The SHMU has been very kind in hosting it for us. So we said, well, can we top that this year? So Render tracked down some more passwords, quite a few more. This year, we have run 1 million of the most common passwords against, again, the most common SSIDs, 1,000 of those, and we have yielded a table of 35 gigabytes. You're going to have to use BitTorrent to download this sucker.
Or come to the village.
Or come to the village, yeah. Come up to the village. We will have them available. But it takes a while to get them. This will, you know, even on BitTorrent, this will run you about a week and a half to download on a continuous download. But we are able to now use these tables to crack an amazing amount of passwords. And on average, you can run these about a minute to two to 3 minutes and crack most passwords on common SSIDs. This is a real good tool if you're doing any kind of wireless security work and people say, oh, I've got the best password in the world that's locking down my thing using WPA. You can walk in and probably break it if it's any kind of dictionary word. And even some of the more common ones where, you know, they stick a one in the middle of the word. Those kinds of things. Very easy to break it now with a password. And again, the idea behind this is to get people to use secure passwords or secure passphrases. You can use up to 64 letters on WPA, and most people are using, you know, their first name or something. So just we're getting bigger and better, folks. By the way, one comment about this. A lot of people have asked, well, what if they've got something that's really uncommon and they want to check and see how long it can break it? There is a package out there that you can generate your own rainbow, your own table, for a single SSID using the standard million passwords. And it's called GENPMK. It's included in the package for CowPatty. And it takes about 30 minutes on average to generate your own table for a given SSID against those million passwords. That is roughly a 2-to-1 trade-off on any SSID or the more common ones, because it will usually take about 60 minutes using just CowPatty in the native format to break it. So you can usually do it a lot quicker using the rainbow. The question was about 30 minutes on what kind of processor, and that's what, a 1.5, 2 gig? Yeah. 1.8 to 2 gig machine, you'll run in about 30 minutes. Okay, the other big project that has garnered some attention already is our own distro. Now, right off the bat, I want to tell you people this is not our own in the normal sense that we built this thing from the ground up. We did not. This is based on Backtrack 2. We have permission from the kind folks at Backtrack. Max said, we told him what we want to do. He said, run with it. So what we did was we have come up with a way to produce a bootable USB disk that you can plug into any bootable computer, USB bootable computer, and you can boot it into a Backtrack mode and it will come up with its own tables ready for cracking against CowPatty. This is just an excellent tool if you don't want to install Backtrack on your own PC, you don't want to necessarily carry around the separate CD and then try and bring it in the tables in on a drive, which can get a little unwieldy. This will actually allow you to plug it into any laptop, boot it up, and away you go. And you can be doing wireless checks inside of, 2 minutes for the boot. We're advocating using a 100 gig table or 100 gig drive so you can get 35 megabyte table or gigabyte tables on there, and that will allow you to then have plenty of other room if you want to put, you know, standard rainbow tables on there or whatever you're going to be doing. But this is it right here. This is model number one or model number two, depending on how you look at it. I got to tell you, too, folks, we announced this back in January that we were going to be doing this. And we started creating the first ones back in February, and we couldn't do it. We ran into an enormous amount of problems getting this sucker to work. So much so that Model 2 and Model 1 were produced last weekend, finally. But we do have it now. We know all the secrets to getting it to work properly, and we will have it written up and on the site. I'm hoping within about 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. The steps are complicated. They're not particularly hard to do, and you can do it in about a half hour or so to an hour. It's just that you have to do the steps in the right order, and you have to do it properly, or the thing won't work. And I got to hand out mad props to the guys down at the Backtrack forums, because some of them figured out exactly where we were going wrong and said, oh, yeah, you just got to flip this switch or put this bit in the spot and get it to work. But it finally did work, and we're happy to announce that it is working. We were afraid we were going to get up here today and say, well, it's not quite there. But it does work, and it if you want to see it working, we're going to have it up in the village. So here it is. Okay, I'm just going to talk about a couple other projects that I was involved in, and then Mike and Render are going to talk about their stuff too. The first smaller project that I personally worked on was called the Unconventional Land. This one is up, in fact, on the website. I got it up a couple of weeks ago. What this is it allows us to set up a functioning wireless LAN at any convention. I've done it now at three or four different cons. It's kind of a great tool for distributing software. I kind of came up with this idea because of the original 7-gig tables. I got tired of carrying around umpteen CDs and DVDs, and it was just not working. So that's what it looks like right there. It's a WRT54, a Linksys NSLU unit, and a hard drive. And you can have a functioning wireless LAN anywhere. It's packageable in a nice little Pelican case. Actually makes it through the TSA without any problems. Yeah, it's a nice feature. And it only weighs about 18 pounds. Another project that we've been working on, this one has been somewhat successful. It's called Project Mutton. And this is a wireless set up and run box of shame, or allows you to have your own wall of shame. We found out that Linksys had produced a unit called a WPG12, and it's kind of an oddball in the Linksys world, because it was actually a i386 processor single board computer, as opposed to some of most of their other ones, which are specialized microcomputers. It looks like a WAP series unit, but it's not. It was actually designed to be a presentation unit. It runs Linux. It runs anything that will run on a 386 series processor. That's the actual unit right there. It comes with that funky remote control, which is actually a wireless mouse and integrated laser pointer. It is designed originally to do presentations like this. You get up and you can just click the thing, and there's a cursor that will move around everything. But in playing with it, we found that we could actually get Linux. It was running a native form of Linux. What we've tried to get a couple of things going on it, and it's working fairly well. We just haven't gotten all the scripts going completely. Iron Geek, I don't know if he's here or not, but he supplied the original Wall of Shame script, which is on his site, and it's real neat. Works real well. We're just having problems getting some of the other packages up and running, but it is getting there, and hopefully that will be up. I'm hoping within another month or two on the CalFig site. This is another one. This is a stealth file server. This is basically the same kind of idea as the unconventional LAN, but what it is it goes in a camera bag, and you can carry around a wireless LAN that you can switch between infrastructure and a ad hoc mode. And it will. You can distribute files without having anything happen to it. It will just sit there and distribute files all day long. We built this one just because people were saying, can you actually build it? I'm not big into sharing a lot of music files and so forth, but I know a lot of people that are. And it was suggested that this kind of thing may be the David versus the RIAA's Goliath. I'm not sure about that, but it can be done. The nice thing about this is it uses the game adapter, and that gives you a single switching capability. And then the final project is called Rolling Thunder, and I built this one for myself, basically. This one is the same kind of thing. It's made to be portable, and it will run out of a car. And I use this one personally. That way I can distribute files from my car as I need them on client sites. And, yes, it does use file encryption. But there's the whole package right there, packed up, ready to go. Okay, thank you very much. I'm done with my portion of it, and now we've got something completely different. We have the Prez 98.
Good morning. I want to talk about three things. First, I want to talk about the wireless contests. The overall wireless contest is broken up into five sub-contests. The picture that you saw earlier right in the beginning with the stacked up WRTs, that's a tower challenge. It's going to be a multi-level contest. They're still working on getting that set up today, but we expect by later today or tomorrow that should be running. And that's going to be a weekend-long thing. The other contests are more time-based. WPA cracking will be this afternoon. The web cracking and direction finding contest will be tomorrow, and then on Sunday we'll have an RFID locating contest. If you're interested in participating, you don't necessarily have to participate in all the contests. If there's one thing you're interested in, or if there's something you want to learn, please go ahead and come up. In addition to the contests, we're having those breakout mini-sessions before the contest. So if you don't know anything about RFID and you want to learn about it, you can come up and learn about it and then participate in the contest if you want. I want to talk about two different projects, one, unfortunately, that we don't have here. One of our members, Barry, lives in North Pole, Alaska. It was a little difficult for him to get down here. And we tried to set up a teleconference, but, you know, they don't have good cell coverage up there for some reason. Barry's The Box is a Janus-style portable computer project that he made for wireless surveys. He had this idea, or he was kind of going off the Janus concept, and he wanted to see what he could come up with. Here's the specs. I'm not going to read through them, but just to give you an idea of what he put on there. And here's a picture of it. It's basically just, you know, a Pelican-type case. He's got Ubuntu running on it. He's got about eight different wireless connectors there. And I asked him, you know, why did he build this thing? And he said, well, because I could, you know. So it's kind of one of those, something he was interested in doing and a project that he built. Unfortunately, like I said, he couldn't be here. But I just wanted to, we just wanted to give him some props for the project that he built and just to kind of demonstrate that. The second thing that I want to talk about is not one of our projects, but I think it's something that we thought collectively was a really cool project to talk about. And this is called the Traveling Terabyte Project. This was introduced last year at DEF CON by our friend Deviant. And this is a project that we kind of thought, wow, this is something that while it's not necessarily a wireless project and while it's not necessarily one of our projects, this is something we really want the community to know about because this really embodies the kind of community that we are. This was conceived by Deviant in June of 2006. He had ordered a couple hard drives for a client and found that they were a good price, so we ordered a couple more. The project is basically two 500 gigabyte external hard drives. The green case up here in front of Thorn is the package. It's in a green Pelican case. It's got power adapters, power converters, USB FireWire. The main idea for this project was to be able to take this case and send it to somebody who may not be in an area where there's a lot of connectivity or a lot of content, like in Iraq, Afghanistan, that sort of thing. To be able to share con talks, video, music, movies, all that sort of stuff with someone who doesn't really have the bandwidth or the capability in a remote location to do that. So this was kind of the project that was introduced at last year's DEF CON. Debuted last year, His project has already been called an urban legend. This was one of our friends, AST Cell, was in the Middle East, and one of his bosses had heard about the project but thought it was just some myth that, you know, was going around. But this is actually something that's taken place. Here's the project's first owner displayed last year at DEF CON. Is AST Cell here? There he is. Here's the first owner of the project, looking very scary in his Army uniform. He took the project from Las Vegas to Tampa, where he was working at CENTCOM, and then he sent the project to me when I was in Iraq. I was in Ashraf, Iraq, which is about 50 miles northwest or northeast of Baghdad, and it really is the middle of nowhere. I really had no. This is my desk here that I was working off of, and not much connectivity. Pretty bored during the day. I got this project. It had all sorts of cool things on it. I had a lot of space to copy stuff on and contribute as well. By October, a second set of drives had been unveiled. This is the second case over here. And now you can see in the picture here that basically all the pieces and components of this thing put together. Traveling Terabyte 1, I looked through the logs. It's been throughout the continental U.S. as well as Iraq and Kuwait. And I've estimated up until now it's traveled just about 25,000 miles. So basically around the globe in excess of one time. So that's pretty cool. If you're more interested in this project, there's the link there for the homepage, Deviance page on the Traveling Terabyte project. There's also a thread on the DEF CON forums that talks about the history of this project. And then there's been some news releases about this project. Like I said, not one of our projects, but something that we really wanted to mention as something that's really indicative of the way this community should be. A whole bunch of people, you know, had ideas and contributed to this project, and now it's benefiting people that maybe don't have the resources to get this sort of material. This is my shameless self-promotion slide. Like we talked about, please check out the village up in the skybox. We're going to start up probably around noon today, and we'll be running the entire weekend. Check out the contest. I'm giving a talk tomorrow night called Hacking Iraq. It's going to be in Speaking Area 1. And then I'm getting out of the Navy, so if you're interested in hiring somebody, I'm looking for a job. Thanks.
Okay, so it's my turn now. Basically, for the last couple of years, I've been the main mouthpiece for the church Wi-Fi, so I figured I'd give these guys a shot to say a few things and make my life a little easier. I just want to start off with sort of a comment that I've been with this community since like at least 99. I went to DEF CON 7. That was my first one. I've been going ever since. And the community has changed. I mean, everything evolves. It's going to happen. But it just seems like some of the good old day things are gone. People are now hacking because they're getting paid, not necessarily because they should. Nobody ever talks anymore. Prime example, like you look at something like the iPhone comes out, and the sheer amount of attention and effort from all of the corners of the globe trying to you know, get apps on this thing and just, you know, make Apple's life miserable. But just the sheer amount of effort and community that just exploded around this project, you don't see that as much as you used to. And it's kind of a shame. A lot of it seems to be with people who have, you know, grown up, gotten jobs in InfoSec, and, you know, hey, you're under NDAs, I can understand that. Hey, I'm looking for a job myself, so if somebody wants to hire me, please. But we need to talk to each other more. There's going to be an example later on where our group and two vendors, major wireless vendors, ended up recreating the exact same work three times. So how much effort have we wasted? It just seems to me like, okay, yeah, you can have your NDAs, you can have your tight little confined research and development departments, but if there's something that's really cool in there and your company's not interested, don't let it die. Say, okay, we're not interested in developing this. You know, let your developers talk to their friends. Let them pass it out the back to actually see the light of day. Give it to people who actually can make something happen with it. All right. So, as Thorne was talking about the site earlier, we're actually going to be changing the site quite drastically here in the very near future. It's been complained that we have this sort of evil look, and in all honesty, we never expected things to take off as quickly as they had, so we never expected people to take us as seriously as they have. So we want to get a little bit away from that. It's basically still going to be talking about the joys of wireless and how much how many interesting projects there are, and it's not a dead field by any stretch of the imagination, despite what anybody might say. There's a lot of good research to be done. It'll hopefully be easier to navigate, easier to maintain for us. Another complaint is that it's really hard to link to. But basically, it's all tongue-in-cheek. We're not trying to be offensive to everybody. We are trying to be offensive to everybody. All right. And part and parcel of that redesign is we're going to go through and create the Church of Wi-Fi Confessional. A church has to have a confessional. So basically, this started out as an idea of security has to be right every time, but the bad guys only have to be right once. Well, you can have all the best intentions in the world. We're all human in this room. Most of us are human in this room. But, we're all trained security people for the most part. We know something of what we're doing. But we make mistakes. And a prime example of that is, I hope they don't throw something heavy at me, is core security. At ShmooCon this year, I was standing in line for registration, and the core security booth was sitting there. And, I'm standing in line. It's about 20 minutes to registration, sitting there bored. And when I get bored, bad things tend to happen. Particularly to good people. So they're giving away these little light-up USB hubs. They got some LEDs in them, the blinkies and everything like that. And they got a whole table full of these things all interconnected to each other. But, you have to power them somehow. So they had them plugged into one of their laptops. I'm standing there with a U3-enabled smart drive with the USB switchblade software loaded onto it. So create a little distraction, go click. I now have all their passwords. And I'm never really satisfied with just, saying, ha-ha, I got you, none of that none of that stuff. I like big, showy presentations. So borrowed a friend's projector, borrowed the sign from one of the other booths, spun it around, and proceeded to project their scrubbed passwords on the screen and behind their booth. So so Core doesn't like me right now. But the real point is, it was a marketing laptop. They had, they wipe it after every conference they take it to. So they had done a lot right. But, here's a company that makes, this $25,000 piece of security software, really cool piece of software. But they still make a basic mistake. So how do you learn from others' mistakes? Because you can read through the manual, but it's all those little caveats, those little things that aren't in the manual that end up turning around and biting you in the butt. So the Church of Wi-Fi Confessional is basically going to be a way for you to share your sins. I did this, and my company was, it got infected or something happened, or we found that, everybody could access, or the, Fox News, let's give the directory for all our images, so index access, and just all that fun that came out with that one. So it's basically going to be anonymous, scrubbed, and safe. It's going to be an email address that you just send a note about the situation. We'll scrub it of all identifying information. We don't want to get anybody into trouble. We just want to know, with this product in this configuration, this is the bad thing that happened. Don't do this yourself. Learn from my mistake. So, unfortunately, Audit, who is our very cool administrator, has been dealing with some health problems lately and has not been able to get this up and running, unfortunately, in the last few weeks. So hopefully we'll be able to get that up in the next little bit after con here and we all sober up and rest up. But okay, now on to some Bluetooth stuff. Church of Wi-Fi is we're mostly into wireless. You know, I mean, we're not really denominational. You know, Bluetooth is of interest. Zigbee is probably going to be of interest, considering we now have the badges that we can play with. There are so many Bluetooth peripherals out there nowadays, and so many little hardware hacks of things that guys have you know, modded stuff and added this and that. But I was just so disappointed. All right, so you got the Bluetooth glove. This guy built... Oh, hang on. I told you not to call me on this line. All right. We have the Bluetooth banana. Is Larry in the room? Oh, wait, in the back. All right, yeah, the Bluetooth brick phone. Guy Bluetooth enabled an old 80s brick phone, so he walks around with that as his headset. And, as we just found out, we now have the shoe phone. How many years has it taken for, and nobody has built the damn shoe phone. I mean, we've been looking at these things since the 60s, so somebody had to build it, so I decided to. Yeah. But if anybody could get me a Teddy Ruxpin, I will be your friend for a very long time. I want an 80s Teddy Ruxpin. But the thing is, though, that you've got so many Bluetooth devices out there right now. How many of you have got a Bluetooth headset? Wow. That's actually more than I thought there would be. I have a major pet peeve with people who wear the things all the time. I'm not trying to piss off anybody in the room or anything, but it's just when you're walking into to, you know, a McDonald's or something like that, and you see these guys are on with these headsets on, it's like, oh, I'm so important. I've got to get this call within, you know, 2 seconds of it ringing, and it bugs me. So, you know, I always look at these things, and I'm like, this is a listening device. This is a listening device with the radio transmitter. This is basically like a little bug, you know, and it just seems like a bad thing. I do a lot, in some of my consulting in that, I've walked into boardrooms, guys will take out their cell phones, turn off the phone, leave the headset on. Oh, gee, it's discoverable. And just more and more as I'm out there, I'm noticing you can't search for rogue Bluetooth hubs and stuff like that. You can't search for... if it's not discoverable, it's really hard to find without paying an ungodly amount for the proper software and equipment. So you can't really do a full audit on the wireless side if you're not covering the Bluetooth as well nowadays. And even then, if you've got some bad traffic, somebody's trying some injection or doing something weird, there's not really a lot of good ways to catch that. So there just seems to be a lack of really good tools for full research. I'm also a big fan of Mayhem, so that kind of goes part and parcel. Bluetooth is a suite of protocols, so you can only interact with things in the way that the protocols were designed to. Yeah, there's a little bit you can abuse left and right, but it just doesn't seem like you can't get the access that you need. BT Crack, which came out late last year, I think it was, is a pin cracking program for Bluetooth, but you require a Bluetooth protocol analyzer to actually capture the packets to do the cracking. Well, they're worth like $10,000 or more. And there's basically no monitor mode, you know, equivalent for Bluetooth. So, you know, you can't listen to the baseband signaling and listen to the raw packets. So I'm basically up here to light a fire under people and get this kind of research started. And this actually only came up about 2 months ago, and it's been utterly amazing what's happened even just before getting here. Others have tried. Hopefully we're better at this because, as you'll see, we actually have something resembling working code. So what we need to do proper mayhem is a Bluetooth protocol analyzer. And they're like $10,000, and I'm a cheap bugger, so I'm not going to be going out and buying one today, that's for sure. You can use the GNU radio. It's a software radio that you can get, but it's like $600 or $800. You need a couple of daughter boards on it, and a lot of programming experience to get this thing to read Bluetooth. There are a couple of other groups that have actually gotten this thing reading Bluetooth, doing all the signaling and that, but even then it's still, there are some technical limitations with Bluetooth that make it, you know, difficult, and, you know, it's still like a $1,000 proposition. There's no real cheap raw enabled devices out there, you know, because you end up having to buy it with a $10,000 proprietary software package. And there's no open source if you do get a raw device. You know, there's no Linux equivalent of some of these things. There's no way that if I can actually sniff these packets to actually be able to decode them and see what's going on and everything. So, you know, what's a hacker to do? Well, you fire up Google. Max Mosier on the remote exploit guys behind Backtrack, had a paper that really caught my eye, and it was Busting the Bluetooth Myth. And he's basically talking about really cheap Cambridge Silicon radio adapters, namely these little, you know, USB Linksys Class 1 adapters. The radio in these you can actually reflash to support RAW mode, but the problem is it requires you to use a proprietary firmware from an unnamed company. So kind of legal, lots of legal, but it basically shows the radio can do what we need it to. I'm not going to mention the company. The EFF has basically been very cool about giving me, you know, foreign nationals, some free advice as to how to not to violate the DMCA. So, you know, thank them if you see them around, but they're keeping me out of jail this weekend. But if you want more information, just Google Bluetooth sniffing for less. You know, your Google flu would be pretty weak if you couldn't figure out how to do this. But if you're doing legit research, you don't want to be using pirated products or anything. It's just not good karma. So what do we need? We need an open source suite for doing the protocol analyzing once we get the packets in. We need cheap raw devices. So we need, you know, we've got the hardware. That's the hard part. The rest is all squishy software. So we just need to get a new firmware for this kind of, you know, these kind of adapters, and it'll work. Unfortunately, we can't actually show you because I am Canadian and I actually would like to leave your wonderful country. But however, is Dominic Spill in back there? Yep, find me later. Basically, over the last week, an amazing amount of progress has been made on the mailing list we've got set up, and I can't begin to understand half of what they're going over and how much progress they've made. But using the unnamed company's firmware, we've been able to actually pull packets in and everything like that with our own open source application. So darkircop.org/bt. It's really rough right now. But there's a link in there to get onto the mail list. Those guys will be able to tell you more of the details as to how far things are going. But we've already been able to sniff parakeets. You know, in an example setting, we've been able to sniff between, you know, a phone and a computer, sniff the parakeets, run it through the OpenCypher's Bluetooth pin cracking suite, and so we've got working code here, so hopefully we could spin this out into something that's, you know, open, legal, cheap, and, you know, let you guys go nuts on this stuff, because, like I was saying earlier, with all those people in those headsets that think are so important, I always see all these business meetings in hotels and stuff like that, where you get all these, you know, financial advisors and everything like that, and they're all so important with these headsets on. I always want to be sitting in the back of the room with my laptop and just sort of, like, deauthenticate everybody at once and start injecting my own data.
I know where you've hidden the money.
And just I just see who gets up and runs. So, and we even have some Wi-Fi mischief, so we're not totally off topic here. Basically, WEP is not dead for research. You know, you can attack the attack tools, another vector that's perfectly acceptable, particularly when there's contests involved. And Michael and the IEEE saga continues. So, Mike here is running the web cracking contest, and it was a major pain in the ass when Aircraft PTW came out, because it took a 10-minute contest and turned it into a 10-second contest. So, crap. What do we do? One of our associates, Eric from Hoers, was formerly my nemesis on the war driving competitions in the past, actually came up with an interesting idea. Aircraft doesn't actually do any validation of the data that it's getting in, and therefore, if you started replaying your own crap data during the replay, what would that do? So essentially, you would send spoofed frames at random intervals with random initialization vectors. Aircraft doesn't know that it's coming from this access point or this access point. It all puts it into the same bucket. The statistical analysis goes through, and it just doesn't make any sense. It just freaks out. And it's thought that, this might be useful as a stopgap for legacy applications like some of the old symbol hand scanners that don't support WPA, just to sit there throwing out all this garbage that hopefully would stretch web cracking from, a couple of minutes to maybe a couple hours. But we looked at it, and it was like, yeah, okay, this is interesting. It might be a good way to screw with people during the competition, but not really that big. Until we found out that this research has actually been replicated 3 times. Air Defense actually owns a patent on this, buried in their paperwork. But Airtight is actually giving a presentation tomorrow at, 6, I think it was? 6 o'clock. Check your schedules. They're basically calling it, Air Defense calls it CHAFF. The other guys, Airtight, is calling it web cloaking. Thank you. Whatever. They got their own terms for it. But basically, if somebody can actually bring me code this weekend, I'll throw you a DVD copy of the 7-gig tables, just because I want to be able to like mess with people during his contest. So, but the thing is that we spent, all three groups spent, how many hours working on this, and we've replicated this effort over and over and over again. It's like, why? We need to figure out how not to do that in future, particularly on something we've all agreed is kind of a, nice to show, but kind of useless in reality. Right. My personal favorite is Michael Countermeasures. After reading the 802.11i spec, basically found out there was a denial of service condition built in, the Michael Countermeasures. I've ranted a lot on this in the last year. Essentially, you create enough errors in the data, and you will the radio will turn off for 60 seconds to reinitialize all its keys, so kicking all the clients off. And this is actually designed into the spec. I put my foot in my mouth at DEF CON 14, the EFF fundraiser last year, because I'm sitting there saying, who are these idiots that are designing these specifications with denial of service conditions? What are these guys on the A211I committee thinking? And the guy I'm talking to raises his hand and says, yeah, I was on that committee. Oh, shit. But we actually turned it into a ShmooCon talk where at 11 a.m. on a Sunday, I'm drinking on stage with the chairman of the IETF, putting the screws to him, asking him, why did you guys do this? So it was really, really funny, but it still doesn't really seem to be seen as a major problem. It's essentially, it came about because of legacy design concessions, and it's a CRC check of the payload of the data. But you still have to cut through sequence enforcement. You still have to cut through the WPA, the AES encryption and everything before you can actually trip this. You have to create two packets with bad checksums by within 60 seconds of each other in order to trip this. Basically Googling around trying to figure out, okay, how can I actually prove these guys wrong? How can I make this happen? How can I be an ass? Google and NIST were of great help. But a lot of it was, okay, it's possible, the error conditions exist, but, not for talking on this public forum, that sort of stuff. There was one lonely NIST document that said, decryption integrity check failed if the class bits are altered. Class bits. Quality of service. Basically, one of the checks that WPA packets or WPA encrypted wireless packets go through is sequence enforcement. They have to show up relatively in order. But if you've got a high quality of service packet, it's going to arrive before your low quality service packet, so it's going to go, you know, break all the sequence enforcement. So they came out with wireless multimedia specifications, and there's separate counters for each quality of service. Now, the Michael checksum extends over the wireless multimedia header, but the header is not actually encrypted. So you can modify the quality of service flags, retransmit the packet, and since we're not actually changing any bits on the encrypted portion of the packet will still decrypt. So if you can get it into the right bit bucket in quality of service, you like change the quality of service bit from a high priority packet, set it to low priority, send it to the other queue, it will then decrypt, because it passes sequence enforcement. 2 seconds. It'll pass sequence enforcement, it will decrypt, but will also trip the Michael countermeasure because you've actually changed a bit that is covered by that. So essentially, we now have a way to turn off the radios for 60 seconds, and due to the specifications, the clients will continue looking for this access point, which means you can fire up Karma, whatever you want, and attack all the clients. So we have a built-in 802.11i specified DAuth and denial of service attack. So I'm getting the big X here, so come and see us up in the village. I can rant about it more. And thank you very much, and give me and the Prez work! Good.